This episode is brought to you by Hyperice, the leader in advanced warm-up and recovery technology. They have tons of innovative products, like Venom heated wearables to help soothe sore back muscles, Normatec compression boots to speed up recovery and increase circulation, and Hypervolt massage guns to improve mobility. Loved by athletes like Naomi Osaka and Erling Haaland. Try them yourself. Get 10% off your order with the code MOVE at hyperice.com.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Good afternoon and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. With the combine and the start of draft season, we are going to speak to one of my favorite people. He is the managing editor of Last Word on College Football, Tony Siracusa. Tony, how goes it?
It is going well, my man. How are you?
Always a good time. Our first in the series, we'll discuss quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Now, First question, when you evaluate a quarterback, what do you look for?
I look for an upward trajectory. I look for someone who's made progress throughout their college years and what they've made progress in. It's one thing just to become a better quarterback. You're expected to do that if you've spent 3, 4, 5 years in college football, or, you know, these days, 6, 7 years in college football. But you're expected to get better. But what did you get better at? Did you get better at reading defenses? Did you get better at making decisions in the pocket? Where was your progress? And those are the things that I think are most significant to the scouts that we talk to when they're evaluating quarterbacks.
First question, second question, I guess, would be Caleb Williams from USC. Now, mm-hmm. There's been much made of some of his behavior, be it the fingernails with the bleep Utah and just his general demeanor. Do you think that is overblown? And if so, where do you see him going and what are his strengths and weaknesses?
I think there's a little bit of immaturity that he has shown, but I do think it's overblown. Because while we look at what college sports is now, when we look at what college football is now, when we look at money that these young men are making in college football, I think our expectations have become that they're just junior level pros. And in some cases, they're still 18, 19, 20 year old young men who are going to have some flashes of that college experience in them. And so I think, you know, Caleb Williams did with his fingernails, and I don't care. I think one of the things that we have to look at with Caleb is anytime there's something that has been said from his camp about what he hopes for the future in the NFL, most of it has come from his dad. And that is always a concern to me. The talk that Caleb wants to have part ownership of whomever drafts him. Well, that's against NFL rules. And someone who knows the NFL would have known that without ever saying it, but his dad said it. There's, you know, doesn't want to be drafted by the Bears, or what, he may go back to college. there wasn't enough of Caleb speaking on his own behalf until the last couple of days. We know that Caleb is not going to do the workouts at the combine, but he is there to do the team interviews. And I think those are going to be significant. I think that they're going to look to see signs of maturity in him that may be a bit of a mystery to a lot of scouts right now.
What is his ceiling, do you think?
I think that he has, he's not close to the ceiling yet, but I think that he is closer than a lot of the other prospects that are going to come through as quarterbacks in this draft. He is physically mature as he's going to get. He's 6'1", 215 pounds. Oh, he's adequate size. I think part of the concern is that 2023, he dropped off statistically from where he was in 2022 when he won the Heisman. And so, you know, he played in two fewer games from one year to the next, but his numbers went down in passing attempts, in yardage by a full 1,000 yards. They went down in touchdowns. So there needs to be the conversation, why? What happened? You know, he sat out the bowl game, which a lot of players do these days to protect their draft status. You know, he's got that confidence in him. He's got significant overall arm talent. He's got a unique ability to pull off highlight level plays, big threat with his legs. But again, he doesn't have the prototypical size of an NFL quarterback. He's a little bit small. There's also the issue that at USC, and remember, he followed Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma to USC. The expectation was huge because, hey, he's the guy that Lincoln Riley essentially pulled out of the Spencer Rattler, you know, offense when Riley was the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma, and chose Caleb Williams. And so they go to USC together, and the expectations were very high. As a team, they never lived up to it during the 2 years. That's not all on either Riley or Caleb Williams, you know, mostly on a horrible defense. But the offense at USC was very simplistic. And there's nothing wrong with that. But then you've got to go through and see, can this guy run an NFL-style offense? You don't learn those things at the combine. You don't learn those at all. You learn those by discussing, having the conversations with them. You learn it at the private workouts that these players will eventually go do in March for whatever teams invite them. Because even at the pro days that the schools have, those are very constructed to highlight the strengths of that player. The college coach, in this case, Lincoln Williams, or you know, the staff at USC will be in charge of who's doing what drills in front of the NFL scouts. And of course, they're doing it to highlight that player's strengths. It's the workouts with the teams that become the most important.
As someone who covers the ACC, and especially take Wake Forest, you've seen enough of UNC quarterback Drake May. Now, we've seen the arm talent, we've seen the mobility. My question is this: does the fact that at times he was unable to, for lack of a better term, close out the show, should that be one of his red flags, or it just was a matter of circumstance, terrible defense, and awful play calling?
It's a little bit of all of those things, actually. You know, his 2022 season was just off the charts. 77% completion rate, 4,300 yards passing, the 38 touchdowns to just seven interceptions. It was off the charts. The offense stammered a little bit in 2023. One, he didn't have the weapons around him. He didn't have a complementary running game like he did in 2022. He lost several receivers from the previous year, and he lost that mojo. Look, they lost their offensive coordinator, Phil Longo, who left to go to Wisconsin. in the same position, and it was a significant change. I mean, he dropped a good 700 yards off his passing totals for the year. I also think that there was some decision making in the crunch that people could call questionable. He started relying too much on his primary reads and, you know, wasn't making the progressions in crunch time. In the middle of the game, the second quarter, there was a flow. In the fourth quarter, in a close game, he seemed to tighten up a little bit and would often take too long to decide who to throw to while he was feeling that offensive pressure. Look, his offensive line wasn't nearly as good as it was the year before. All of those things will be taken into consideration. That's why some of the more successful scouts rely so much more on game film than they do on what happens at the combine. And he's someone else who is not expected to do the drills at the combine. That the game film tells you so much more because you can see the context and the circumstances from when he did well to when he didn't. Like you said, he's a good sized quarterback. I mean, 6'4", 230. He is an NFL sized quarterback by any measurement. He's got a very impressive arm in terms of strength and velocity. He's got all of those things. You need to check where he is mentally in terms of being able to run an offense.
Now, Jaden Daniels, the Heisman winner from LSU, there's been excessive conversation, especially in circles around the Raiders, saying that they would like to move up because their head coach, Antonio Pierce, was an assistant at Arizona during Jaden Daniels' tenure as a Sun Devil. Mm-hmm. Two-part question. Do you think that would be a wise move? And looking at just his athletic palate and what he brings, do you think that he would be able to just step into the Raiders offense and just be able to go?
Let me answer that with a little 10-second digression. I am one of those guys, I don't like taking quarterbacks with the number one overall pick. I realize everybody does it. But every quarterback who comes out of college needs time to develop into an NFL quarterback. Taking them number one overall is a gamble. That having been said, we know Caleb Williams is going to go number one. The Bears are either going to trade Justin Fields and then take Williams number one, or they're going to trade the number one pick probably to the Commanders, and they'll take Williams number one. Okay, so I got that out of the way. I don't like taking quarterbacks number one. But I'm going to say any team, Raiders or anyone else, who moves up to take Jaden Daniels, that is a smart thing to do. I am very high on Jaden Daniels within this group of quarterbacks that we're looking at going into the NFL. 6'4", 210 pounds, probably stand to put on 5 or 10 pounds, you know, in an NFL weight room. We talked early on about the upward trajectory that I like to see. That is Jaden Daniels. When he was at Arizona State, like you mentioned with Antonio Pierce, he was a run first, throw second quarterback. His game in his 2 years at LSU just evolved tremendously so that you could see all the physical gifts that this young man has. Last year, 3,800 passing yards, a 72% completion rate, but another 1,100 yards rushing on top of that. Obviously, all those things got him the Heisman and the Davey O'Brien Award and all those things, but just exceptional athletic ability. But he had all those things already. He matured as a quarterback. He matured as a game manager. His pocket maneuverability and evading pass rushes was really good. He's got better arm strength than what he gets credit for. You really watch him go downfield. The accuracy is there. The strength is there. His struggle was operating from within the pocket as a straight drop back quarterback. That wasn't LSU's offense either. So that's not all on him. He was asked to roll out on far more plays than he was to stand back and be a pocket passer. To me, his mobility and his arm strength are tailor-made for modern NFL offenses. They really are. I mean, whether it's the RPO or any kind of quick pass scenario offense, this guy is tailor-made. And so if you're willing to give him that time, because you figure he's really developed into the quarterback we see now, he's developed into that over 2 years in Baton Rouge. Give him that time, even if you're, projecting him to start in the fall, work with him, work on that upwards trajectory, because you used the word a little while ago, someone's ceiling. I think we're not close to his ceiling yet. I think he's got a lot of growth. He's this good, and I don't think we're close to his ceiling because the athleticism is just off the charts with this guy. So whether it's the Raiders or someone else moving up to pick him, I think he made a smart move. I'm betting a lot on this guy.
Great. When we come back from break, I want to discuss more quarterbacks we haven't discussed and kind of see who could possibly surprise and kind of raise their stock, or just who might be a day two or three option for the Raiders if the trade up for Daniels doesn't happen. But that's after a quick timeout. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Getting engaged is a moment worth cherishing. A one-of-a-kind ring that you design at Blue Nile can help your love sparkle. Just choose your diamond and setting. When you've found the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Finding the right engagement ring can be nerve-wracking. At Blue Nile, you'll have the expert guidance needed and a diamond guarantee that ensures you're getting the highest quality at the best price. Cherish all of life's moments and save up to 30% at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Does Monday at the office feel like a storm? Not with Microsoft Copilot. That feeling when Copilot gets everyone up to speed instantly? It's sunny again. When Copilot simplifies complex data so your teams can act, that sun's shining on a beach. And when Copilot uncovers hidden insights, you're on that beach with your people and you find buried treasure. That's Microsoft Copilot. Learn more at Microsoft.com/AI for all.
This episode is brought to you by Pepsi Wild Cherry. Pepsi Wild Cherry is bursting with delicious cherry flavor and a sweet, crisp taste that gives you more to go wild for. Getting wild may look different these days, but whether it's opting for a solo Friday binge watch or a big night out, everyone can indulge in their wild side with Pepsi Wild Cherry, also available in Zero Sugar. So grab a Pepsi Wild Cherry and get wild.
We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Tony Siracusa, the managing editor of Last Word on College Football. Tony, I want to discuss Michael Penix. Like you, a lefty. What do you think his age will be held against him and the injury history, or has he shown enough in his last couple of seasons at Washington that he has moved past the injury bug?
I think it's still a question. I really do. Because look, the injuries that he suffered at Indiana were significant. We're not talking about how he banged up his shoulder and missed a few games. We're talking about two torn ACLs. We're talking about a major shoulder injury. Now, the last 2 years at Washington, obviously, he looked terrific. But because he stayed as long as he did in college football, there is the age thing. I think that the NFL scouts are having to make some adjustments right now because of the COVID exemption year in college football. And you had so many players staying for a fifth or sixth year, whereas we went through an era where we got used to any good quarterback was out after 3 years, right? Now you got guys in the transfer portal. And I mean, you look at what happened to guys like Bo Nix and Michael Penix, who really prospered, got a whole new lease on, and Jaden Daniels got a whole new lease on life with that second school and spending 2 years there. It really upped their game. I think the adjustment needs to happen on the NFL side of things, because we still have a couple more years of quarterbacks coming through the college system where they were able to take advantage of that 2020 exemption year for COVID. So there needs to be that adjustment. Look, Penix is just like me. He's a left-hander. You know, when we're side by side, it's hard to tell us apart. he really prospered in his 2 years under Kalen DeBoer at Washington, was a Heisman finalist. The thing that you really like about Penix is that he appears unflappable. He's flushed out of the pocket. He's on the run. He keeps his head up, looking downfield, and he will rip a ball in between two defenders to a receiver on the other side of the field while he's on the run. His confidence in his arm, his ability, usually winds up being mistake-free. You see some guys who, you know, their ego is such that they're making plays. They're trying to make plays that they got no business trying to make. That's not the case with Penix. More times than not, he pulled it off. So he looks and throws like a modern NFL quarterback. But I think there will be durability concerns with him. I think, again, he's not going to throw as best as we can. It's a fluid situation. But as we record this, where it is, he's not going to throw at the combine either. But he will go through the physical examinations, and those are going to be a big touch point for the NFL scouts and the GMs. It's funny because when you get to the combine, you always start to get these leaks about whomever. I'll make up a name, Joe Smith. Oh my gosh, we measured his hands; they're tiny. You know, they're so small. And it's like, really? That's what we're going to do. We're going to buck a guy down two rounds because of the size of his hands. It's already leaked out. Michael Penix has absurdly big hands. So he can handle an NFL football. It's going to be okay. But yeah, he's got the skill set and he's got the size. He's got all of those things you want. But his durability will be a big topic in the interviews.
You mentioned Bo Nix and talking about somebody who's had two different careers. Do you think at the next level we'll see the true Bo Nix? Is it the Auburn version, the Oregon version, or somewhere in the middle?
There you go. Somewhere in between. He was haunted by what happened at Auburn. Different offenses, different offensive schemes. And when he went in, because he was a legend, because he's a five-star recruit and he's going to Auburn and his dad had been there. And it's the storyline that if he had gone to play in the Big 12, it wouldn't have happened. If he'd gone to play in the Big 10, it wouldn't have happened. But it's the SEC, and we are in a hurry to canonize any significant quarterback in the SEC. He's a Heisman candidate after week one against, you know, Savannah State or whoever they played against in his first game. Oh, look at these eye-popping numbers out of a freshman. Come on. We blow it up. We, meaning the college football press, the media, the fans, we blow it up because it's the SEC. he was a much, much, much better quarterback at Oregon. And I saw Auburn fans say, he went to an easier conference, so that's why he looked better. Come on, man. Washington was playing for the national championship. Oregon had all of two losses last year by a combined 6 points to Washington. So it was not easier by any stretch of the imagination. He could have hung around Auburn and been on a mediocre team, but he went and played for Dan Lanning at a much higher level, and he threw for over 8,000 yards in his 2 years at Oregon. I mean, he really did, as you said. He got a second lease on life. 74 touchdowns and 10 interceptions over 2 years. That's a really nice ratio to have. He's got that pro-level aptitude with the quarterback fundamentals. His release is very quick. It's very compact. His thing is going to be he still needs to develop his footwork better. He gets very jittery under pressure. Probably comes from all those years at Auburn being under pressure constantly. You know, he needs to work on his progression so he's not telegraphing those primary reads. He's got the skill set. He absolutely does. He is not ready to be a starter in the NFL in September. He needs some work. You know, he could be ready later on in the season or next year. He's not someone who, you know, a team should be looking at saying, here's Bo Nix with his great numbers. He's our starter going into fall camp. Not him. He needs some work on the fundamentals.
Speaking of, we have a quarterback in J.J. McCarthy who won a national championship. I mean, played well. But to me, it's a weird question. I want to ask, do you think, even though they won a national championship, everything went right, that because of his lack of, like you said, upward training as a quarterback, that another year at Michigan probably would have helped him?
I think so. Look, he's a good quarterback, but he's the same quarterback he was last year. You didn't see this upward trend. He's a good quarterback. He's physically gifted. He's not elite at any level right now. I know Michigan fans just devour this guy. He's all this. You know, the big question will be, I mean, remember the Penn State game? Does anyone remember that? Where, you know, they didn't throw a pass the entire, you know, fourth quarter. The question is, can he run that kind of a high pass offense and do it, you know, because that's what the NFL is. The NFL is essentially going away with running backs. They've minimized their value so much that it is a pass first, pass second, pass third, run fourth offense, you know. And he's yet to run that kind of offense. So I think there are a lot of questions. I believe he is doing the workouts at the combine this week. He needs to. Basically, anyone that we had not already mentioned before him, anyone who comes after that needs to do the drills. They need to be working out because there is a lot that needs to be seen from them. There are enough on-field questions that we need answers before we know what their prospects are.
Who is one quarterback that you see that, like you said, we haven't mentioned that could possibly be thought of higher than originally anticipated?
I'm going to say it's Spencer Rattler from South Carolina. If you followed Rattler's career, and of course I was in California when he was in high school in Arizona, so he was a big name out west. And some people will remember he was in the documentary series QB1 that highlighted him and two other quarterbacks, and frankly, I don't even remember who the other two were in that particular season. And you looked at him and said, there is no way this guy is going to survive college football because he's got attitude issues. He's got mental and emotional immaturity that will just devour him in college football. He was quick to blame teammates for his mistakes. He had a rough go of it at Oklahoma. He didn't have the time there to grow up. And I mean that in every facet, physically, mentally, emotionally, because so much was expected of him as the number one quarterback in that recruiting class, what he was going to do with the Oklahoma offense. And he had some good moments, some bad moments, and then got replaced by Caleb Williams. And he's out the door to South Carolina. He had some good moments and bad moments for the Gamecocks, but we saw an increase in the good moments and a decrease in the bad moments. And we saw an on-field leadership ability start to grow in him, a kind of almost like a moxie that says, hey, guys, we're up against it, but let's hang in there. I got you. Give me some room to run the offense, and we're going to get this done. You started to see those kinds of attributes in him. The physical skills have been there, the arm strength, the mobility. He's got very good footwork. He needed to get away from being kind of gun shy in making decisions, because early on he was looking over his shoulder so much in Oklahoma. You know, a couple mistakes and you're headed to the bench. He needed some space where he didn't have to worry about that so much, and he got that at South Carolina. So I think this can be a significant week for him. If he can look good in the on-field drills, do well in the interviews, be humble, be mature, talk about how you grew at South Carolina. I think we can see some movement up the charts for somebody like Spencer Rattler.
Let me ask you a tangential football question.
Sure.
As a Rams fan, you've had the privilege of having two all-time great left tackles in Jackie Slater and Orlando Pace.
Yep.
If you're building a team, which one of those do you take in their prime?
Oh, wow. Wow. I got to go with Jackie Slater. I just do. Orlando Pace is an all-time left tackle, no question. Jackie Slater was dominant in his era. Jackie Slater was someone that the defenses had to work overtime. The week you're prepping for the Rams, that defensive coordinator's got to work overtime to figure out how to handle Slater. No, you're not really going to handle him. But how do we not get demolished by him? There are a handful of left tackles who over the years just became so significant. You look at a guy like Jonathan Ogden and what he did in Baltimore. It was huge. I mean, he transformed it into you could be this massive guy and still have ability and agility. But yeah, if I'm looking at my Rams history, I'm inclined to lean towards Jackie Slater.
Speaking of Rams history, I am old enough to somewhat remember the late 70s, early 80s Rams. And do you think it is unrealistic to be able to draw a line from the style of play of Jack Youngblood to Max Crosby?
It is. Look, it was obviously a bit of a different game, back then, even in terms of just the rules of what defensive players could get away with, quite frankly. There wasn't quite as much called on the defense back then. Hands to the face was, you wouldn't even think of that as a penalty back then. Guys like, you go back even further into the 60s. Deacon Jones, was head slapping somebody on every play. That was just part of his game. And certainly Jack Youngblood, Hacksaw Reynolds, guys like that with the Rams and the Super Bowl team in 79 against the Steelers were big into that. There was a certain just surge ahead, forge ahead kind of defense back then. Everything was pushing forward full speed. Do whatever it takes to get the guy in front of you down. Now you see a lot more stunting on defense, moving guys around, kind of hiding players so you don't know where the blitz is coming from, things like that. It's a little bit more, I would call it schematic now than it was then, which was just brute force. I'm going to whip your rear end and, you know, try and stop me kind of mentality.
Well, you said that being in North Carolina for the last 2 years and being away from the West Coast, what's one place that you miss their food?
Oh, this is the easiest question you've ever asked me, my friend, in all the years we've been doing this. Hey, if anyone on the West Coast who listens to your show wants to send me an In-N-Out burger with some fries, I don't care if it comes cold, man. I will find a way to make it work. It's funny. When Stanford and Cal and SMU were added to the ACC in this last season, and they'll start playing this season, and I had a conversation with Dave Clawson, the head coach at Wake Forest, who said, you know, this is just the way things are going to work. When the schedule comes out, I guarantee that we're going to wind up having to go all the way out to the West Coast early in the season to play someone. We're not going to get them out here. Sure enough, the schedule came out, and I think early October, they've got to go out to Palo Alto to play Stanford. He saw the schedule, and he talked to me, and he said, Syracuse, and he said, you're probably happy about that. And I said, you kidding me, coach? We get to the airport, In-N-Out burgers are on me, man. Come on, me and you. We're going to go to In-N-Out and grab a couple double-doubles. So there is nothing out here that compares to it. And I don't want to hear people hitting me up talking about Cookout or someplace like that. No, it does not compare. So that was an easy one. In-N-Out burgers.
The managing editor of Last Word on College Football, one of the best out there, Tony Siracusa, thank you so much, my friend, for joining us on this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Terrence Biggs, it is always a pleasure to work